Welcome. We're live now. We've been doing Marathon Atlantis. Round the clock. And last night, I was reading a book. And I stopped to see if I was boring anybody. And the calls indicated I wasn't. But maybe I got a different crowd tonight. And we'll see. You all can slip over there. Edgar Cayce, in 1940, I think it was, indicated near Bimini in the Caribbean, I think his words in that sleeping reading, as it was called, were Atlantis would rise again. I made one of my more definite statements the other night. I stated unequivocally that I believe that the builders of these monuments, such as the pyramid, once lived on Atlantis. And when it says Enoch was not, for God took him, Enoch walked and talked with God and was not, for God took him. Where? I mean, everybody assumes he was the first astronaut without a ship. The Bible doesn't say that. It says he walked and talked with God and was not. That means he was there and then was not. For God took him. Now I have a question. Where did he and God take their walks and have their talks? You see, modern evangelists have so cheapened communication with God. Robin flies by and goes, chirp, chirp. And they say, God told me. I've listened to evangelists, you know, carry on a conversation as they repeat it and say, now God told me, thus and so, and I said, God, now, and God said. I've almost prayed that God would actually speak out like he did to Moses. They would become holy streakers. You've heard of molecular displacements? It cheapens the reality of God. Even holy Moses, the poor old guy on the other side of the rock that heard God talking to Moses and thought God was talking to him, ended up respecting that voice and being awestricken by it, even hearing it on the wrong side of the rock. Oh, I know what they mean. He walked with God means he was righteous living. That isn't what it says. He was all of that. I'm sure he was righteous. That isn't what it says. It doesn't say he walked righteously. It says he walked with God. Where? Either God came down and walked with him, which ought to have produced a few earthquakes, or Enoch walked with him. Now, it never says, really, that God left the Garden of Eden never to return to it. He kicked Adam and Eve out. And it was still very much there because he put cherubims with flaming swords guarding the entrance to make sure they Didn't get in again. You know what side they guarded? North, south, east, or west? Which was it? Huh? You don't know? Does anybody know? What doesn't the Bible say? East, right? Well, if the Garden of Eden was in China, right on the shores of the China Sea, the cherubims were guarding against swimmers. You have to go west to find it. You know, most people consider Garden of Eden an acre or two. Now, I believe the Garden of Eden was on Atlantis. And God retired those cherubims because the chances of anybody getting to the tree of life was removed. And I believe that when God decided to build the pyramid, you see, people think they know when the pyramid was built because there's a little inscription above the king's chamber that has the cartouche of Cheops or Khufu. It's a forgery. It's Colonel Vice's vice. We'll be teaching on that when I get back to the pyramid. There are no writings in the pyramid, no hieroglyphics, in the land permeated with heathen symbols and hieroglyphics. There ain't none in the pyramid. None in the descending passage. None in the ascending passage. None in the grand gallery. None in the queen's chamber. None in the king's chamber. There are no writings at all till you get above the king's chamber. Colonel Weiss spent a lot of money. It was a day when you justified your trips by coming up with spellbounding discoveries. And he associated himself with some crooks. A real crook. One of the crooks ended up owning one of the finest hotels near the pyramid. Boring in desperation to find something no one else had found. Because Herodotus had said it was built during Cheops' reign. What did he know about it? He starts boring above the king's chamber and discovers those additional chambers. Lo and behold, not in the first report of the discovery, lo and behold, writings are found therein. About that time, the first textbook on the hieroglyphics had come out, and it could be obtained in a library in Cairo. He made a mysterious trip with one of his crooked companions to Cairo. And the hieroglyphics fit the hieroglyphics that anyone could have gleaned from that book that he could have seen in Cairo. But before he leaves, a second book comes out that makes a critical correction between a symbol for the king and the symbol for Ra. And lo and behold, another hieroglyphic is found. Only problem is, when analyzed closely, the pyramid was built from the ground up. That seems logical. But his hieroglyphics have a name of a generation later in the lower one. Like, here's two passages in the pyramid. Am I boring you?
No,
I'm tired of reviewing. I like to talk about something else for a change. Above the king's chambers, for example, they find these other chambers. Well, now, if you find a hieroglyphic for George Washington here, and for Columbus here, that would make sense, because Columbus most likely could have been living when this one was built. Then Washington came along later and added another layer. But if you find George Washington here and Columbus there, it's hard to believe that somebody who lived generations earlier would put his signature in the layer above the guy below who came later. It seems very unlikely that Columbus would have signed this one and Washington that one. Likewise, old Colonel Vice miscued. They made a quick correction with the next textbook and it gave him away as the forger corrected. The problem was the earlier generation of kings was in the higher bunch of rocks. And interestingly enough, 4,000 years ago, whoever wrote those hieroglyphics knew prophetically which side of those chambers Davidson would bore into. I mean, Vice, rather. Here's Colonel Vice having to discover something because the other things have been discovered. He's boring up and finding passages, chambers above the king's chamber. Anybody got a pyramid book? Run and get it for me, somebody. I wasn't going to talk about this tonight, but it's an introduction to what I'm going to do. I want some people maybe have no visual image at all of these passages. And there must be a picture in this little pyramid book. Yeah, here we go. Come over here, Jerry. You see, this is the king's chamber. And right there's a chamber and a chamber and a chamber and a chamber. Colonel Vice, just like the Arab who first broke in and found the passageway, he bored through rocks and broke into these chambers. Now, 4,000 years ago, how did they know which of these four sides plus a top and a bottom that he would bore through? Because the fellow who wrote the hieroglyphics just happened to write them all, luckily, on the wall he didn't bore through. You want me to go by that slow? Isn't it a marvelous providential happening that those kings put in their cartouche in those little passages? I mean, if you want to put your cartouche, you can find a better place than that. I mean, these are real modest kings hiding it up there. But they were smart. Clairvoyant. They said, 4,000 years from now, Colonel Vice is going to blast one side of these things open. So we better make sure we put all the writing on the other side. Little detective work, and the scholars have bought it down through the centuries because two things coincided, and you'll always fight harder for something after you say it than if you hadn't said it. So Colonel Vice pulled the hoodwink of the century. He made his investors happy. He came home a hero. He discovered and confirmed that Herodotus was right. Cheops built it. And his crooked buddy got a hotel for keeping his mouth shut. And they put the writings in there as a forgery. Once that stupid idea that we are bound to the pyramid being built in Cheops' reign is abandoned, then it's catch as catch can. You find other evidence now and other criteria. Now, I am totally convinced in my mind, like other things, you can't prove it. Historical certainty is a relative matter. By definition, you historians know that historic certainty is an abstract concept. You can have historic certainty when every logically available piece of evidence is in. Now, being an eyewitness is logically available, but experientially it isn't when the moment passes. So from that moment on, any historic event is relatively ascertained. That's why it takes faith in history to take your benchmarks and act on them. It takes faith in science to take your benchmarks and act on it. You can't even live without hanging your body on something your mind agrees to. Your heart responds with enough confidence, you can begin to verify it in experience. God says His Word is the most certain thing to do that with. And He defines faith as action based on His Word, and everything else, a pistis, is faith focused in the wrong direction. That's a subject I've been on for 9 years. Historians stuck their neck out. It was so convenient. Vice proved that Herodotus was right. Well, Herodotus was not necessarily right. Furthermore, if it hadn't been a forgery, the word really means Lord of Lights. And another person, Lord of Lights, or building in honor of the Lord of Lights, could have put the cartouche in there, and old Cheops decided, that's a good name for me to take. And he stole it, made it his cartouche, and put it on a mine over in Sinai. There is no proof that it was built during Cheops' reign. I believe God gave the plan, as Josephus said. Josephus says that the descendants of Seth, knowing that a great devastation was coming on the earth, built two monuments, one of brick, one of stone. The one of stone stands to this day, he said, first century, stands to this day in the land of Sirius, Egypt, where they worship the dog star. None other than the pyramid. And Josephus' statement is, descendants of Seth, build it as a monument to preserve knowledge through a Holocaust, through a cataclysm. I have a little comment to read here that's one of the little gems mined out of Atlantis by Charles Berlitz of language school fame, second generation. Atlantis, the eighth continent. I was reading about that last night. I think I folded down something that I might find since I'm paying for the time. I will see if I can't find it. If I folded it down, you're lucky. If I didn't, you'll have to wait another time and another season. I seldom make you do that, so you shouldn't feel badly about it, because you don't have to do that very often. Well, not folded down there. Not folded down there. An Egyptian Copt historian Masudai, writing during the Middle Ages, I fooled you, I found it, recounted a tradition that the Great Pyramid was built during the reign of the gods, before the flood, to safeguard ancient knowledge. There's two witnesses, Josephus and Masudi, or Masudai. Now, until the Rosetta Stone was found and hieroglyphics were determined to be an alphabetical language and not just caveman picture writings, no one could translate or understand what has come to be called the Book of the Dead, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, so called because it's a scroll buried with the dead. With the ability to translate the hieroglyphics, thanks to the work of Champollion and others, and from the Rosetta Stone, the Book of the Dead was found to deal with the journey and destiny of the soul. And the pyramid is called the Pillar of Enoch, and is described as outlining the descent and the ascent of man's soul. They have a descending passage that is equivalent to truth under law. The children of Israel, from their exodus out of Egypt until the resurrection of Christ, they call it the Hall of Truth and Darkness. The grand gallery that breaks out 286.1 inches in seven risers, called the grand gallery, in the Egyptian Book of the Dead is the Hall of Truth and Light. They called it the Pillar of Enoch. 365 point, the fraction that makes up the solar year, is the exact age of Enoch on the earth. The Enoch circle in the map room is the key to deciphering the pyramid. Enoch stamp is all over the pyramid. Enoch was a descendant of Seth. Who better for God to tell than this preacher of righteousness that he walked and talked with, and that walked and talked with him? Prophecies of the future, and entrust to him either the architectural plan of the pyramid, that to those who believe was built after the flood, would have been carried through the flood by Noah, or the actual building of it before the flood. In that case, Enoch was the builder. Now, the apocryphal books that are in that three-book group that we're giving you, or not giving you, but making available, Jubilees, Enoch, and Jasher, you'll find many references to Enoch that expand the biblical record that's very brief, including the shocking consternation of those who journeyed to the place where he ascended. Where'd God take him? As we've been teaching from Isaac Vale, there was a great canopy covered the earth, if you take his theories. The earth that then was very different than now. Open at the poles. And the, without an exception, all ancient peoples locate God on the peak of a holy mountain. Now, was the earth that then was arranged in such, was Atlantis with a mountain on it that in some manner went outside the canopy? How do these sons of gods come and go from, quote, heaven to earth, who were attracted to the daughters of men and produced the giants that cruelly persecuted men before the flood. Hey, if you think the Bible's a myth, be my guest. But if you believe it, I say to people, if you're going to be a Christian, be one. If you're going to say you believe the Bible, don't be afraid to look at it. It says some rather strange things. I get these questions all the time. What does it mean when the sons of God came down and attracted the daughters of man, mated with them? Well, first off, you understand what mating is? They were not professional stork callers. It means what it says. Now, I happen to look at the Art Panak series, probably the finest Jewish expository study on the Old Testament coming out in this decade. I happened to read it yesterday. How did they look on these passages in Genesis where the sons of God came down and mated with the daughters of men? They don't answer it. They quote various rabbis and give you three choices. You make the decision. Choice one, sons of God meant elders and rulers. So the rulers mated with the daughters of ordinary people. That's not likely to produce giants, necessarily. I mean, you know, there's a second step there that needs to be considered. Just because nobles go slumming doesn't guarantee giants. Second choice. Descendants of Seth, sons of God, mated with the descendants of Cain. Cain came from the same womb. I mean, you know, a little common sense tells you quit wiggling. And then they give the third alternative, rather apologetically. Angels. Well, I don't really know what angel means. Angel means messenger of God. Now, we could open a myriad number of things there. When I preach, I'm a messenger of God, and I ain't no angel. Just wait and see if I got any argument, and glad to see I didn't. The best way to interpret the Bible is assume that it means what it says, and that God knows how to talk. Some form of being with access to heaven and access to God, to earth, called sons of God, not descendants of Adam, mated with the daughters of men and produced strange creatures. It had to be destroyed. Now, these apocryphal books always refer to these beings as watchers. Some of them came teaching evil things to mankind. Some of them came teaching good things in the period before the flood. And a good question for you to consider, well, I'll say that one. These apocryphal books say Enoch was with the watchers. Now, when poor old Lamech had Noah, it scared the liver out of him. He looked a way that made him think it wasn't his kid.
This is the end of side one.